The truth is that anybody who is successful has been unqualified for that next step.
Hello and welcome to the brand new You Show. I'm your host, Ryan Roten, and today's guest is Rachel Stewart. Rachel is the founder of Accelerate Restoration Software and an executive vice president at Titan Restoration. She's also the author of the book, Unqualified Success. In the book, Rachel helps readers bridge the gap between where they are now and where they want to be in order to achieve massive success. Rachel, it is my pleasure to welcome you to the brand new You Show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, and I'm honored to be on your show.
Well, I was actually honored to read your book, to get a copy of your book, because I got to say, I have struggled with many of the things that you discuss in this book as I have launched and started my business and gone through the process of trying to build a brand for myself over the last few years. And so I really wish you would have written this like 6 years ago. That would have been fantastic.
Well, that's why I wrote it, because I felt the same way as I've been trying to build my career in different companies. It was just information that I wish I would have had access to.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a lot about like feelings and how our feelings can drive us to do certain things. And one of the things that I kept going back to is like, it wasn't just applicable to me as I'm trying to build my business, but it was also, as I looked back, it's highly relevant to people who are in their career, who look at a position or want to apply for a position and automatically think to themselves, well, I could never get that. You know, to me, that's such a shame, because how many people are not reaching their full talent because they have that mindset going into it?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's so many things that hold us back. And a lot of it is just how we view our own qualifications. And if we could just get over that fear and take a chance, I think it would be astounding at what can be accomplished.
Yeah, I agree totally. And we're going to get into all that stuff. But before I get started, there is one question that I ask all of my guests, which is, if you could vacation in only one place for the rest of your vacation days, where would you go?
Well, I'm personally a huge fan of Newport Beach in California. So that's one of our family favorites. And I think the reason I love it is because there's no schedule and we just kind of wake up when we want and roll out onto the beach when we want. We ride our bike down to get a taco when we want, you know, the sunset down the boardwalk and getting a donut. It's just complete freedom.
Okay, so now I want to go there right now, actually.
So I've been to multiple places, but as far as just vacation and relaxation, that's
the place.
Yep.
Are you a surfer?
I'm not a surfer. We do a little bit of boogie boarding, and that's about the extent of it.
Okay. I tried surfing once. It was not successful, but I was highly unqualified for it.
Well, then you just needed a little bit more grit.
I did. And we're going to get into that. But first, how do you think growing up with six brothers prepared you to become an unqualified success?
Well, I think that was a big influencer in my life for sure. So I was in the middle of, these six brothers. And so you just learned that you had to kind of be a little scrappy, you know, and make a place for yourself and stand up for yourself. Otherwise, you couldn't be a wilting flower. So I think that there was a lot of characteristics that I developed through that experience that really have helped me in my life.
I can only imagine, by the way. I only grew up with a sister. And so I can't even imagine what it would be like to have six other siblings running around. But one of the things I liked about your book, which really actually, you may not realize this, and I'll bet it works for a lot of people, but it like hooked me immediately, was the fact that you said you're not even qualified to write this book. And as an author, I can remember many times when I was in the process of writing my book where I'd kind of stop and go, what am I doing? Like, is anybody ever going to read this book? Why, you know, why am I doing this? And so a lot of the things that you talk about in this book were just resonating with me over and over and over. And I love the thought of we're all just unqualified. So I'm wondering, as you were going through your career, like, when did the idea for you to first write your book come to you?
You know, I think it had been stewing in the back of my mind for a while, but it really kind of came to the forefront last year as I was running into so many conversations with friends and family where they were not stepping into who they really could be and not working towards their dreams because of the fear of being unqualified to get going. And I remember being at dinner one night with a friend, and she was telling me about this, you know, awesome idea that she had or she really wanted to do. And I was like, why don't you go ahead and do this? Why don't you take that step? And she's just like, oh, Rachel, I'm not like you. Like saying that as if I had something special. Like,
you're magic. Oh,
you have this so wrong. Like, there's nothing special except that I'm not afraid to give it a go when I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm confident that even if I don't know now, I can figure it out, or I can surround myself with people who have already done it and who have already figured it out. Like, all we have, mm-hmm. and the internet is such a resource for anything, any idea, any concept, whatever. You can find an expert out there that can give you, like, help fill in the knowledge gaps that you have. And so I think that was kind of what inspired it, was like, oh, more people could be doing amazing things if they just didn't feel like they had to already have it figured out before they start.
Right. I think, and so, like, you and I were talking before I hit record, and I think a lot of people stop for many reasons, but then once somebody gets started, there's a whole nother thing that happens, which is this notion of imposter syndrome, which is, am I, you know, kind of like what I was doing, as I just alluded to with the book, you know, who am I to write this book? Is anybody going to read this book? You know, and so our thoughts and our mindset, I think, play a huge role in how we're able to, quote, get past this imposter mindset, which, by the way, I think your book is the recipe for how to do that. But as you look at somebody starting something new, there's a lot of things that our mind, you know, a lot of games our minds play with us. So how important is going into any new venture or any venture period? How important is your mindset to the ultimate success?
Awesome. So thanks for this question. I think there's a lot of things. First of all, I think when you talk about imposter syndrome, realizing that you are not the only one that feels that way, that is a universal feeling for almost every successful person I've ever met. Has that feeling. And if they don't, then they probably have some narcissistic, egotistical stuff that they're dealing with. That's a whole separate set of characteristics that you don't want to deal with. So first, recognizing that you're not alone in that. But mindset, I think, is obviously the place where we start. So if that's the foundation where everything else happens. And so if you can start with a mindset of feeling confident and working through that, then you're going to have so much better results than trying to just get to work and hope that the results or the action is going to make you feel something different. So it's starting with a thought that creates a feeling and then produces results versus, okay, I'm going to get to work, and then I think it's going to create this feeling, and you might be waiting forever for that feeling. So it's starting with the thought first.
Yeah, it's like, it relates back to what you just said, the person who you were speaking with that said, I can't do that, I'm not like you. You know, clearly she has it in her mind somewhere that she's not like you, and therefore she can't wrap her head around, you know, what do you do next? Because most people, like, you have two interesting formulas in when you talk about mindset in your book. One is like what most people think, which is, hey, if I just start taking actions, I'll get results and I'll ultimately feel good. But the problem with that is taking action doesn't take into account the thoughts or the feelings that you have before you take that action, which can at some point stop you, right?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I see this all the time with people, and especially as they're chasing their career or whatever, like they feel if they reach a certain level of success or a certain promotion or a certain something, then they will start feeling confident and they'll feel successful. Well, the problem is that bar always continues to change because you hit that and then you're like, oh, I still don't feel successful. It must be the next achievement. It must be the next. And it's this totally moving target. Whereas we have to start with, okay, I am the thought that I'm successful and I'm capable. And because of that feeling, I'm going to be able to achieve this and this. Then you're already starting from a place where there's power, where, you know, you have a free flow of ideas, and it just makes the whole process that much better.
That's probably one of the hardest things, I think, for people to wrap their mind around when they look at their mindset is how do you generate those thoughts that are different when you may have, say, a belief system today that says you need to think or feel this particular way, but you know if you're going to go from point A to point B, you need to be thinking or feeling something different. Yeah, what are like some exercises people can do or some things that people can start to practice that will help them start to change their mindset and in the belief system that they may have around what you said, which is, if I want to get to the next level, maybe then that's when I'll start to feel good.
Yeah. So I think a couple of things. First of all, understanding that our belief systems are totally malleable and they can change. We have the power to believe whatever we want to believe, and whatever we believe ends up being the truth. So starting from that place, but my favorite one is called bridging. And so let me just give you an example of what bridging is. So let's say that you want to start a new venture, but in order to do that, you're going to have to get really good at selling whatever it is that you're going to start doing. And you hate sales, and in your mind, your belief system is that you're terrible at sales. So you have to get from a place where I'm terrible at selling to I love selling and I'm really good at it. So that's a pretty far distance to get to those places, especially if you can find all of this like evidence that shows you that you're terrible at selling. You're like, well, look at all of these examples. See, I'm proving myself right. So here's the thing about your brain. Your brain loves to be right. And so it will continue to try to find evidence for whatever it is that you believe. And because that's what it does. So what you have to do is change what you believe so that then your brain will start producing evidence to show that that is the case. So in this case, you're trying to go from I'm terrible at selling to I'm awesome at sales. So maybe you can't bridge that gap immediately. Maybe that's too far of a gap to go to. And just telling yourself that over and over isn't gonna really change what you fundamentally believe inside. So maybe you have to start with, I can learn to be good at sales. I can learn to be good at sales. And so instead of saying I'm terrible at sales, you can say I can learn to be good at sales. And you just start there. And then once you're confident and feel comfortable with I can learn to be good at sales, then you can go to I like sales, you know, or I'm good at sales, or I can relate to people really well. And so you're just bridging this, doing small incremental mind shifts. And then as you do that, then your brain's going to start producing evidence to prove that you're right. And then eventually you can get to a place where you're really good at sales and you've done it. And so I give a story in here about Warren Buffett and how he was terrified of public speaking and just could not do it. He signed up for classes and then would quit and all of these kind of things. And now, I mean, you see him, he speaks all over the world. He, you know, all of these kind of things. Somehow he ended up learning how to bridge that gap. And so it's just starting where you are, tweaking your thought just a little bit to where it's like, okay, I can believe that. And then starting there and then tweaking again. And suddenly you're kind of bridging this gap.
Yeah. I can totally relate to that. And I think anybody who is starting a business out, if you didn't start in sales or you didn't do sales prior to starting your business, you probably have that exact same thought. I know when I got started, I was like, I'm not a salesperson. But at the same time, there's this thought in the back of my head saying, yeah, but if you don't sell stuff, like your business isn't going to work. So you have to figure out how to sell stuff. And, you know, I didn't go, like, I still don't consider myself to be an excellent salesperson, but I am better than I was when I first started. And I look at sales as more as, this is how my mind bridges the gap, right? I look at it as it's more about understanding where your potential client is and how you can help them, as opposed to, I'm going to try to sell you something, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So, and you can start figuring out whatever it is that you're really good at, because there's lots of different ways to sell things, right? And so maybe, like you said, you've mastered the ability to relate to where, you know, your customer is, and being able really to connect on that level. And then in the process, then you're helping them solve problems, and through it, you do sell your product, you know? So it's just figuring out what angle that you're really good at, and then focusing on that, and then bridging that piece of it.
Yeah, I love that. And that's great advice. It's way better advice than the typical, well, just fake it till you make it, that you hear all the time these days. But when people say that, what are they really telling you to do?
Well, so I do have a chapter that's called Fake It Till You Make It. So what I mean by that is not to be a charlatan, that you're trying to pull something over on somebody. What I'm talking about is that you're just getting to work and showing up until those results, long enough until those results can shift for you. So, you know, any of us who are starting something new, we're not going to be experts immediately. And like you said, you know, you gave surfing one shot and then you're like, okay, that's not so much for me. But what if what if you were destined to be a really great surfer, you know?
Then I would have denied the world of that at this point.
So, no, you got to keep showing up until you develop the skills long enough for those skills to develop. And, you know, none of us came to the boom doing whatever work we did.
That'd be nice though, if it worked that way, but it doesn't. I mean, and then there's also the not just fake it till you make it, which kind of implies it's okay if you don't really know what you're doing, just go do something anyway. But then you have kind of the opposite spectrum on that, which is I will, not me, but like someone will think to themselves, well, I need to learn this and I need to learn that and I need to do this. And eventually everything that I'm learning is going to like perfectly align. And then I, you know, the sky will part and it'll go, and I'll know exactly that this is the moment in which I'm supposed to move forward. But that doesn't work either, does it?
That absolutely doesn't work. And especially today when like technology and advancements are happening so quickly. Like if you spent your time waiting until you're perfectly ready and have all of the knowledge, all of the skills, all of that kind of stuff, you're going to constantly be in a classroom you can't possibly absorb all of the knowledge in whatever industry it is that you're focused on. So at some point you have to go, I'm far enough. So even in really technical fields like medicine or, where you need a degree and stuff like that, it's like, okay, at some point you actually have to start practicing. You can't just, and that's why they call it the practice of medicine. It's because it is a practice, and that's what all of us are doing. We have to just get in there, get our hands dirty and start working and not keep waiting for some grand moment, because it will never come. And
I see this so, I mean, just if I just look at myself and my evolution personally, you know, so for me, one of those big things recently has been video. I held myself back from doing video because I didn't have the right microphone, because I didn't have a wireless microphone, because I didn't have a DSLR camera, because I couldn't memorize words. So many things, my mind roadblocks, my mind was putting up in front of us. And finally I just said, you know what? You have a phone. So like, just use it and just try it. And, you know, and then I've got a son who tells me all the time he's going to be a YouTube star. And so I say, well, okay, where's your first video? Well, I don't have a camera. Well, I don't have an Elgato to record whatever. I don't have this. I'm like, well, all of those things I can. So it's easy for me to give advice to him, But when it comes to yourself, the reason, like one of the reasons that you talk about in your book is why we don't move forward and we put those excuses in front of ourselves is because we're afraid of what other people will think. And so how does that fear of judgment like play with our minds and say, don't go forward because people will, I don't know, make fun of you or not like you or whatever it might be?
Yeah. So one thing that I've come to realize is that judgment is going to be there regardless of whether you are working or not. And anybody who's been on the internet, like there's things that I see on the internet that I think are absolutely fantastic. And then you go into the comment section and people are just telling, like tearing them apart. And that is just the reality of the world. Like you're not going to be able to please everyone. You're not going to be able to like make everyone happy. And, but the thing is they're operating from a place of fear as well. Like that, that reaction is coming from a place of insecurity and fear that they're dealing with. And we're all in this exact same bubble that of fear and insecurity and whatever childhood trauma that we're trying to overcome. So
yeah.
The purpose is just to get in and deal with it anyway. So you're going to get judged for doing it. You're going to get judged for not doing it. And so do you want to look back on your life and wish you would have taken the step and tried to do something? Or are you just going to always be, oh, I should have, or I'm going to, or someday?
Yeah, it sounds like you're saying that it's okay to tell yourself and others, I just don't know.
For sure. For sure. And being vulnerable in the fact that, hey, you know, I don't have it figured out. I'm going to give it a go and I'm going to do my best and we're going to see where it lands.
There, you use a term in your book. And I don't remember if you came up with it or somebody else did. So I apologize for that, but I love it because it's true. But most people don't think of it this way, which is everything is figure outable. Is that, do you believe that everything is figure outable?
I totally believe that. And that wasn't my term. And if I try to like map that back to who was the original, who ever said that, because there's so many people that use that term, but absolutely, like there is nothing that you can't figure out. Like if somebody else can know it, you can know it. And I talk about that a lot in the book, is like, if you're at a place where you don't know how to take the next step. So I have a friend who wants to create a course and a curriculum or whatever. And she was saying, oh, I don't know how to do this. And I'm like, so like that, like this is a totally achievable goal because you can figure out as you get going. So let's just start like with an outline. Let's just start wherever we are. And then there's so many resources where we can figure out how to do the next step after that.
Yeah, not everybody's born with the course creation gene, is what you're saying. but we are all born with the ability to time travel, which I loved how you said this in your book. So tell me about how our brains can help us time travel.
Okay, so our brains are amazing and they can go from where we are in the present, so you can be somewhere in the present, and quickly, easily recall a beautiful memory that happened, you know, years ago as you were watching, you know, your son swing on a swing, you know, and a big toothless grin and all that kind of stuff. And it can then move forward into the future and imagine what's going to be happening in the future as you're, you know, standing at his wedding. And everything, like your mind can create the vision of what the future will be like. Like all the way down to what it will smell like, what it will like all of the senses, what it, you know, what something will taste like, all of these kind of things. And that brain is so powerful that as you're conjuring up what the future looks like, your brain will then go to work trying to create that. So I talk about how powerful vision is and how you can really use it to work on whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. And there's a lot of famous people who have accomplished amazing things. I reference Sarah Blakely. She talks about this a lot because she imagined exactly what her her life was going to look like when she was selling copiers, you know? And, and so as you picture whatever it is your vision is and make it very sensory rich, with a lot of details, what it will taste like, smell like, feel like. And as you start thinking about that vision over and over and over, then your brain goes to work subconsciously trying to bridge that gap. It doesn't like that dichotomy of where you are and where you're thinking about. And so subconsciously it will try to lessen that gap, and you'll start solving problems or having things come to pass that, you know, help you get to where it is that you want to go.
Yeah. I mean, I think about that. Like, I think 30%, I'd read somewhere, 30% of our day we spend daydreaming. And it's actually, if you really think about it, in a lot of cases, it's not daydreaming. I think you're visioning. You're thinking about what, how things could be or how things might be, you know, or, you know, or you're just truly daydreaming about something, who knows. But like, a lot of people will listen to this and they're going to picture like Saturday Night Live, Stuart Smalley standing in front of the mirror saying, I am good enough. Or the church lady, whoever it was. Right. But I am good enough. And so they, because they do those kind of things, it kind of makes light of the seriousness, I think, behind the actual practice, which is, I think it truly can help you change your thoughts if you, and at the same time, change your belief system, right?
Yeah, for sure. And like, when you say we spend our time doing things, and we can do it in a positive way or we can do it in a negative way. And so often we start visioning all of the things that could go wrong with a scenario and all of the things that might not make it, or all of the things that are standing in our way or whatever. And so that's the vision that we're implanting into our brain. Whereas if you can switch that into something that's really powerful and really ignites your senses, then again, your subconscious will try to, like when you're not working, when you're sleeping, when you're going on a walk, when you're working out at the gym or whatever, your subconscious brain will start going to work trying to make that a reality. And I think it's so powerful, and we underestimate the power of our brains all the time.
Yeah. I mean, a perfect example for me is I just recently did a keynote presentation, and as I was practicing, I had a vision in my mind of what the facility would look like and the people who were in front of me and ultimately how would the presentation go well or not. Right. But obviously it went well, or I hoped it went well, you know, but I think, you know, doing those types of things, like not just reading a slide, for example, but if you're getting ready to present at an important meeting in your company, it's not just a matter of memorizing the slides or making sure that they're pretty. I think you also have to like internalize all that stuff and think about, okay, what's that room going to look like? Who's going to be in that room? What are things that I can say or do that are going to resonate with some individuals who I know I need to have on my side, if you will, something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think you see athletes do this all the time before a big event, or like, you know, when the camera's on them before the Olympics and they're getting, you know, warming up or whatever. And you see, you know, sometimes they have their headphones on, or they, you know, and they're just zoned. You can just see it in their, you know, and what they're doing is they're picturing what this event is going to be like for them, and what their form's going to look like, and all of the different things they're picturing in their mind exactly what that's going to look like. And that's such a powerful technique. You know, the best in the world do it. And we could be doing that in our, whatever it is, like you said, a speaking engagement, or even with our whole entire careers, and even with our families, like, what do we want our family life to look like and all of that kind of stuff. And so you're picturing the end, and then it helps you work backwards and fill in all of the things that you need to do. Now, I will say that, like, you know, having a vision and a dream without work is just delusion. And so there is that next step that you have to take, which is the work to get you there. But I think it's an awesome place to start.
Yeah. I'm going to get to work in a minute, but I also want to point this out because I love this. I listen to Jim Quick also, and he has a great podcast, Quick Brain, I think it is. But you quoted him in your book, and I love it, is if you fight for your limitations, you get to keep them. So I know you know what that means, but for those who may be hearing that phrase for the first time, can you explain a little bit more about what exactly that means?
Right. So your brain likes to be right. So again, so if you're constantly in your head saying, like, I can't do this, I can't overcome this, these are the obstacles, I'm just this type of person, whatever this is, you know, I'm just a person who doesn't like to do sales and that's just the way I am or whatever. The more that you spend your time with that and you fight for those limiting beliefs, then that's going to be your reality. Like, that is going to be the results that you get from that.
Once you've taken the first step, your brain comes alive again and it says, wait a minute, like, what are you doing? And it wants to fight you from continuing to move forward because it likes to fight for what it considers normalcy. And so this is where the part of the process comes in that you refer to as grit. So tell me a little bit about what grit means as it comes to trying to obtain our vision.
Yeah, so grit is just about the ability to stay in discomfort. And the longer that you can stay in discomfort, the more likely you are to be able to achieve your dreams. So like you said, your brain's going to come back with all of these obstacles. And there's going to be other obstacles that come up as you're trying to, that will happen. And the minute that you feel that discomfort, you'll want to go back to a safe place. You'll want to go back to, oh, you know, maybe this was just a bad idea, or distract yourself, like find your favorite numbing agent and participate, whether that's scrolling or drinking or whatever, you know, just to disconnect from that feeling. But the longer that we can stay in discomfort and deal with those uncomfortable feelings, the more time that we have to work out whatever it is that we're trying to figure out.
Yeah, I smiled when you said that, because one of the things that I found, especially early on, I'm getting better at it, I'm still not perfect, is that I would distract myself with all kinds of things that were meaningless in order to avoid the thing that I knew I should be doing. Because my mind was like, hey, that's going to be uncomfortable to go do that. So let's not do that today. Let's go do this other thing.
Right. And then we fill up our to-do list with all these insignificant things that won't really move the needle. But yeah,
right.
It's pretty common.
Is it fair to say that discomfort is kind of the form of currency, if you will, that you have to use in order to pay to reach your vision?
Yep, absolutely. So I think it was Brooke Castillo that I quoted in my book that I kind of heard that from, that just says, you know, like, that's the currency to reach your dreams. And, you know, are we willing to pay it or not? And, you know, I think grit's something that we can build over time. I don't think anybody, there's certain life circumstances that make people better at dealing with that discomfort because they have had practice dealing with discomfort. But that's something that we definitely can build, is the ability to have more grit and be able to stay in discomfort longer.
Yeah, and I think another reason why people don't like to stay in discomfort is just simply fear, right? They're afraid of what it could be, whether it's good or bad. But most of the time, we always think it's something bad is going to happen. Like, well, if I do this, I might lose clients. Or if I do this, I might look bad, that type of thing. So how do we, you have a really good exercise. I like the way you phrase it too in your book about fear and how you can overcome it, which is, let's bring fear along for the ride. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I talk about like the game that we play in childhood, right? So I'm going on a trip and I'm taking, I don't know if anybody, we called it the ABC game, but we used to do a lot of road trips, and you would start and going, I'm going on a trip and I'm taking an apple with me. And then the next person would have to go, I'm going on a trip and I'm taking an apple and a banana. So this is, and that you'd go through the alphabet, and then the first person who forgets loses. So, the point of that game and the way that I compare it to fear is that no matter where we go on our journey, we're pulling out of that driveway, you know that fear's coming along. And so if you can come to accept that that's just a reality, like I'm going on this journey to my dream, you know, I'm going to start my business and fear's coming along with me, and you just accept that right up front, then it doesn't prevent you from pulling out of the driveway. You just know that it's going to be there. And then I think there's something to be said about exposure therapy. The more often that you expose yourself to fearful situations and realize that it's just fine, then the more likely that you are to not have such a strong reaction to fear later. So let me give you an example. Like when I first wrote my book and I wanted it to get out in the world, I started getting on podcasts. And the first podcast that I ever did was terrifying for me. Like I was all nervous about it. I don't know that it went very well. I probably wasn't very articulate, all of those kind of things. Now it feels like a very comfortable experience and I'm just having a conversation. And did anything change in that? No, it was just my exposure to it. So I think exposure is a good thing. And I also think understanding that it's just going to be along for the ride and to not be panicked that you're fearful.
I love that. I think another way to bridge fear or to overcome fear, if you will, I don't know that you ever really overcome it, but think of like what you said earlier, bridge the gaps in fear by going through and exposing yourself to that fear more often, right? So, you know, and it, we're talking about like fear could be, I don't know if I want to take this next role because I'm afraid I won't do well at it. It doesn't, or you know, I don't know if I want to get on this podcast. I don't know if I want to do this video thing because I'm afraid it's, and it all comes down to you're kind of afraid of what others will think about you, which is what we got back to talked about earlier. But I think ultimately what we're afraid of is that we're going to fail in some way. And none of us like to fail. But one of the things that you talk about in your book is, you know, and everybody talks about, well, failure is great. You can learn from failure. Okay, well, that's nice, right? But it still sucks when you go through it. So you talk a lot about how you can reframe a failure. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think failure feels so personal to us, right? Like it's more than just, hey, this didn't work. It feels like it says something about who we are as people, our value, our worth, all this kind of stuff. And like for me, I grew up in a very like achievement-driven household. Like, so failure was definitely not celebrated in my childhood. It was like, what can you do to avoid failure? Like, we are successful, we succeed. And then as you go along these journeys, you realize that failure is inevitable. Like failure is part of the process and it is part of the road to success. So first, like taking the stigma out of failure first is like the very, very first thing, where it doesn't have to mean something about you personally. It just means, okay, this didn't work. Now what are we going to do to try, you know, option two or option three or option four? And just saying, okay, that was the ability to learn. So I think, like you said, it's easier said than done. And especially when it's somebody else, it's easy to see that, okay, that doesn't mean anything about them. It just means that particular thing didn't work. And so they can try something else and tweak this and tweak that, like an experiment. But for us as individuals, so many times we equate that to our value or worth.
You have a chapter on vulnerability, and it's almost like failure ties into that so much, because if you fail and it's visible and people see it, you just kind of opened yourself up to back to, you know, circle back around to judgment of others who are also afraid of being judged by you. Right. So when you talk about vulnerability, like a lot of people say, okay, yeah, you got to be vulnerable and people can relate to vulnerability and all that. But what do you say to those people who go, you know what, you're just, vulnerability is just you showing a weakness?
Yeah. So I think there's so much power in that though. And I'm learning that more and more, because again, this isn't something that I naturally was really good at. Like I said, you know, when you were up with six brothers, you do everything not to show your underbelly, because like they'll find that weakness and dig at it, you know. But so often, like you're saying, when you can see other people's failures, when you can see other people are dealing with the exact same struggles that you're dealing with, it provides so much power. And I went to a conference once, and this was such a, like, a hugely instrumental moment for me. So there was somebody up on stage, and I wish I could remember what their name was, because I would love to give them credit, but they were talking about, so first of all, this person was is a venture capitalist. They've started and been a part of a lot of successful businesses and a lot of in technology. And so with me just starting a technology company with Accelerate and software, I was just dealing with so many, like, all of these feelings of fear and failure and imposter syndrome and all of this kind of stuff. What do I know about technology? Like, having to learn all of these things about development and teams and all of this stuff that was totally foreign to me. And it just was feeling overwhelming. And I went to a conference, and somebody was up on stage, and they were talking about, you know, one of their ventures and stuff like that. And how in every successful company, you have what's called a near-death experience. Like where they thought it was over, the building was on fire, it was done. And that happens several times. And the reality is just being able to stick with it and not panic and not, like, jump off the boat and give up and do all that kind of stuff. And it was just such a huge relief to me to, like, hear that somebody else that was very, very successful, that had done this several times, was in the exact spot that I was dealing with, and all of those same feelings. Now, it wasn't at the scale that they were dealing with, and they were dealing with a lot, you know, at a lot worse level than I, which was even more reassuring to me. So I guess my point is like, him getting up on stage and not being able to just say, yeah, look at how successful I've been and how awesome all of these companies have gone and how wonderful it was, for him to be like, you know, we didn't know what we were doing. And we had a slogan that was, we're going to suck less than the competitor, you know, like, rather than, hey, be best, you know, it was, we're going to suck less. And I was just like, that just gave me so much ability to get back into my life and my work.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that ties into the, like, this overnight success thing, right? People don't want to acknowledge or fail to acknowledge or even understand that you don't just wake up one morning and boom, you're successful. So I think one of the reasons why we like to hear about the backstories of movie stars and stuff is because it makes them vulnerable and it makes them real.
Exactly.
You know, and it's like, okay, they were just like us. They weren't born with an acting gene that I didn't get. You know, it's they're people like us. They just had a different mindset, a different vision, and a different way of showing up that maybe we didn't have as we went through it, but that doesn't mean that we can't learn how.
For sure. And, you know, and there are people that are, like, just naturally gifted, naturally talented, I would say, but there's still all of these things that they have to do to develop that natural ability and that natural talent. So, you know, again, we're all going to have our strengths and our weaknesses, but there's still so much work, and intrinsically just getting up every day and grinding it out. And you're right, there's no such thing as an overnight success. It's years and years and years of work that went behind that.
You have a chapter called Showing Up in your book, and it's really great. But one of the things that you talk about it that resonated with me was this concept of having a minimum baseline. What is a minimum baseline?
Yeah. So a minimum baseline is, like, when we're struggling to get going and everything, that you give yourself a good minimum baseline of, okay, I just have to at least show up this many times. So if you're trying to get back to the gym or back to, you know, a workout routine or whatever, giving yourself a minimum baseline of, and usually that's so far from where your goal is and where, but it keeps you showing up every day. It keeps you, like, being present and doing the things, the little things. 'Cause I'm personally a big believer that it's the little things that over and over and over on a daily basis that add up to these massive successes. A lot of times we think that we have to take huge, huge strides. And I don't think that's the case. I think it's the little things that compound over time.
And these little things, when they compound over time, create something called a ripple effect, which is a very interesting concept. I like the way you discussed it in the book. What is the ripple effect?
So the ripple effect is how our work and our showing up affects the people around us. And just being present and doing our own work provides so many opportunities and even just ways that other people can glean. And you hear all the time that rising tides raises all boats and stuff like that, about how like us showing up and doing our work gives opportunities to other people. And yeah. I love that idea. Like it provides community into whatever it is that you're doing, that you're not just showing up for yourself and have these selfish motives, but that when you show up and do your work in the best way possible, that provides opportunities for those around you. And it allows other people to be like, oh, if she can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, exactly. So last couple of questions here, we'll get start to wrap up, but I guess I want to say even before that, I loved your book. I think people need to go out and read it. It should be like required reading for anybody who's thinking about changing careers, moving up in their career, or starting a side business. I think if they start with your book first, they'll be in a much better place three or four years down the road. you can use that as a testimonial if you want. But so last question, and this might be an obvious one, but I want to hear you answer it because I love the book so much. Can you be unqualified and still be successful?
Absolutely. And I think actually the truth is that anybody who is successful has been unqualified for that next step. And so if you can just go into it knowing that and embracing that, which I do a lot in the book. I tell you that I'm unqualified to write the book. I've been unqualified for every role I've ever held. And, you know, the point is to not stay in that unqualification. It's to dig in, do the work or whatever, and then overcome whatever it was that you felt unqualified about, and then hit the next goal, the next stage, you know? And it, like, to me, that fuels like so much fire and so much passion, is that ability that we have to continually grow and progress and do the next big thing that at that moment we're unqualified to do. That's just so much fun for me.
Yeah. I just love the thought that we're all unqualified. And I think if you just start there with that realization, you can do so much more than what you think you can do.
For sure.
I just think it's awesome. So, Rachel, for those who are interested in learning more about you, learning more about your book or your software company, what are some of the best ways for those folks to get in touch with you?
Yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Unqualified Success. If you go online, I'm on unqualifiedtools.com. So TOOLS. So there's a lot of tools and exercises that you can just get off of my website. You can buy the book on Amazon.
And it's well worth it, by the way, in case I hadn't mentioned that once before. Rachel, as we wrap up, you have any final thoughts? I think you just did a great job of summarizing it, actually, but do you have any other final thoughts or tips you'd like to leave with anybody who's listening today?
Yeah, so I would love to hear other people's unqualified journeys. So I think that there's so much power in being able to share that as well, and recognizing that other people are going through the same things that you're going through, and how people are overcoming it, and the creative ways that they're figuring out how to bridge those gaps and stuff like that. So reach out to me, share those stories. I would love to hear them. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
Sure, no problem. And I think you just came up with your book, your next book. The title is Unqualified Journeys. And then you can interview people who are unqualified and how they've overcome fear and failure and all these other things that you discuss in your book in order to become an unqualified
teacher. I love that. Thank you.
Hey, all right, Rachel, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Today's show was edited and produced by Ryan Roten. Today's music was purchased via soundstripe.com and is titled Hudson Hawk by